Stephen Hough has recorded all of the Beethoven piano concertos, and all of the royalties are going to a musician's charity. Stephen will talk more about that and what he's done to bring a 21st century feel to these incredible concertos. I'm Julie Amacher, and that's New Classical Tracks from American Public Media. Enjoy. I'm talking with Stephen Hough about his new 3-CD compilation of the Beethoven Piano Concertos. Stephen, you recently put together this massive project, and it was no casual undertaking. And if I understood this right, it took you 2 attempts in 2 different locations on 2 different pianos before you felt pretty satisfied with the results. Is that right?
Now, what happened is we did the complete cycle of 5 concertos in 2 concerts. So we did numbers 2, 3, 4 on the one night, and then 1 and 5 on the next night. And they were televised in Finland, and we recorded them. And that was going to be the record with some patches that we'd planned 2 weeks later. I listened to those recordings, and I just wanted to... I didn't like the sound very much, and neither did the engineer. And I just wanted to revisit them. I just thought, in the studio situation, I think we can do something better. We've played together. We've done them in concert. Let's go back to the drawing board. And of course, they looked at me crazily because the idea was that we'd use these concerts and make that the CD. And I've done that before with Rachmaninoff, with Tchaikovsky, where we've done exactly that from concerts. So we went back, and then I was trying the piano, and the Binner Bösendorfer there that I'd really liked very much but hadn't worked for the concert because it wasn't quite brilliant enough in the big concert hall. But of course, in a studio situation, we didn't have to worry about the brilliance. And I just love this piano. It felt to me so human, so warm. So a week that was meant to be quite easygoing with a few patches here and there for coughing and mistakes and so on, suddenly we had to record all 5 concertos in 5 days from scratch. So we all kind of had to get lots of energy going, and that's how this recording was in the end was made.
You have played these concertos with many different orchestras over your career. I'm wondering how you decided to do this with the Finnish Radio Symphony Orchestra and Hannu Lintu.
Well, a number of reasons, really. I had played the first concerto with them 2 years before this project. And I just loved working with them. First of all, the hall there is fantastic. It's a new concert hall, just one of the most wonderful halls in the world. So that we had a good situation for that. This orchestra and Hannu, to me, they combine the very best of performance practice, historical performance awareness, stylistic awareness of how Beethoven himself, as far as we can tell, would have understood articulation and bow strokes and all of that, but also with the full extent of everything that's good about our modern instruments and our modern understanding and the long history of playing Beethoven too. So to me, it was the best combination for me. And I have to say, as I'm talking to you right there, I feel very much this with Osmo and the Minnesota Orchestra too. How do you get something that's not self-consciously trying to be historically correct, but yet naturally absorbs an intelligent assessment of the playing styles of that time and make it something fresh for the 21st century? So that was very much what was behind this project.
So how did you make it fresh for the 21st century?
Well, I think by going back to the score to start with, we want to see what Beethoven wrote and why he wrote it. But we also want to take on board good tradition and take away bad tradition. And this is a sense of study, really. And it was, I could tell when I did that first concerto with Hannu and the Finnish Orchestra 2 years before this recording, that they were on the same hymn sheet, if you like, with me. I knew that we were coming at this from the same angle, and that's what thrilled me. And I thought, gosh, wouldn't it be great to record the whole cycle with them?
You mentioned that this ended up, in the end, being a produced recording in a studio and that you were on a pretty tight time schedule. I'm wondering if there was a memorable experience that you could share with us that only you would know because you were in the studio.
Oh, how interesting. I would say that the fourth concerto, it took us a while to have a meeting of minds about the first movement. But I think that actually that was a very productive tussle, if you like. I think Hannu wanted the tempo to be faster than I did. He felt more naturally that it should flow more. And I felt that that Beethoven's Allegro Moderato, which is a very unusual marking for Beethoven. Beethoven isn't about moderato. You know, Beethoven's an extreme kind of man. He's about a certain kind of clear conviction about everything that he writes. But to me, this fourth concerto first movement is all about other possibilities. It's about Beethoven, first of all, beginning with an improvisation on the piano. The orchestra comes in a different key. Then the pianist comes back again and the orchestra has set forward this certain kind of argument, and then the pianist comes in and says, yes, but what about this? Or can we try this? Saying to the orchestra, yes, but what if? I love the psychology that's going on there. Concert pianists until really the 1940s, 50s, didn't just walk onto the stage and begin to play a piece. We think of that very much now. It's how people do. They sit down, they start to play a piece. A pianist would warm up on stage before the audience. He or she would play a few chords, an arpeggio, a little something just to settle people down, get to feel the instrument, and then would begin the piece. And you hear this on some recordings that we have preserved from radio broadcasts of that time, exactly that. This fourth concerto is very much like that, and I love the psychology of that movement. I love to play with it. I love to get inside the mind of Beethoven as I'm playing that movement. And so in a way, the way I was working with Hannu, I think it ended up actually getting a sense of that. And I love that about how we came to this. This kind of that we didn't totally agree at first. And as we worked together and I took a bit of his idea, he took a bit of mine, then we moved it around. And I think we got into the spirit very much of that movement, which is all about not indecision as such, but the fact that any musical experience is open to infinite numbers of possibilities.
For the first movement of the Piano Concerto No. 2, I know you composed your own cadenza, and you performed that on this recording, is that right?
That's right, yes.
Can you talk a little bit about that process? I mean, when you start to write a cadenza, how does that work?
Well, obviously, at the time of Beethoven, he wouldn't have expected us to play his cadenzas. The tradition was that you made up cadenzas as you played. That was part of what was interesting for an audience, was to see the pianist
making up cadenzas. And very few people still do this. Robert Levin is someone who comes to mind who still improvises cadenzas on the spur of the moment. But as the 19th century progressed, composers wrote cadenzas that were meant to be played and they were part of the piece. So you think of Schumann, of Grieg, of Rachmaninoff, of Tchaikovsky, all of these composers wrote the cadenzas into the fabric of the piece. With this second concerto, this is the concerto with the most interesting history because it was written mostly before his Opus 1, his first published compositions, the trios. It's a very early piece. It's a piece that he actually later in life said some not very kind things about. He didn't think it was one of his best works. I think we can see why he would say that, because Beethoven is somebody who was not just a perfectionist, but was someone who was developing all the time, was changing, was expanding the boundaries of everything he did, whether it was the keyboard he wrote for, the piano technique, the harmonic language, everything was changing with Beethoven. And so to look at this youthful piece, I think he felt, oh, come on, I've done better than that. Why would you still want to play that? It's interesting, at the end of his life, he did write a cadenza for this piece. And he wrote it in a very different style, a style that was even beyond the style of the Emperor Concerto. It sounds more like his piano sonata, Opus 101. It's a very curious cadenza. I've never liked it very much. I think it's Beethoven writing a cadenza for a piece that he didn't like himself, if his letters are anything to go by. And I've never felt it worked. It's not that a cadenza has to be in the same style as the concerto. It's fine if you go off into other directions. But to me, this cadenza, it starts as a fugue that doesn't quite work as a fugue. Then he does something else. And then the very end of it, it sort of winds down and you have this strange mystical world. And then he does a big scale right up the piano and it's over. And then the orchestra has to get back into this 18th century flavour in the last few bars of the piece, and then it's over. And to me, I've always felt dissatisfied somewhat with the way that it worked. So I wanted to write something that was more in the style of Beethoven as he was writing that actual concerto at the time. So that's what I did with my own cadenza for this.
This is Beethoven's 250th birth anniversary year. Is that the primary reason for you recording these piano concertos, or is there a broader reason than that?
Well, I've always wanted to record them. This was a good excuse to do it. It's ironic, isn't it? There were so many things planned for this Beethoven anniversary, and most of them have dissolved because of the virus, and we haven't been able to do all these concerts that we've hoped to do. But I did think it was a nice coincidence that we would release this CD with the anniversary year. I have played these pieces my whole professional life, and I've taught them, and I've heard other people playing them. So it was really time, in a sense, to do them myself. I felt I was ready in the sense that I had a very clear conception about what I wanted to do with them. And the record company said, fine. So we put the whole project together. But there's always new things to say about music like this. And I feel like, well, let's do it again. You know, I think that these are pieces that you never get tired of hearing or of working with.
What is it about Beethoven's five piano concertos that set them apart from other piano concertos?
I think with these pieces, you sense a picture of Beethoven's whole life. As I mentioned, the second concerto was written before his Opus 1. It's for the earliest time of his career. To me, the fourth concerto is almost like a prophecy of his late period. Elements in there, especially the sort of mysticism and the the contemplative nature, which I think you know is already looking into that final period. And you get someone who is creating the piano concerto as we know it today. You know, Beethoven's coming out of the tradition, of course, of the Mozart piano concertos, and that's where his first two concertos sit comfortably. By the Emperor concerto, you have a piece that is what the Romantic piano concerto would become. You have something which is already the pianist as soloist. The idea no longer that the pianist is part of the orchestral texture, part of the orchestra, that indeed it's the person conducting the orchestra who's playing the piano. By the Emperor concerto, you have a template which is going to be used by every composer since to this very day, which is the soloist, the spotlight on this great big piano in the center of the stage, and also the sense that there is not always agreement between pianist and orchestra. And indeed, in the Emperor concerto, you sense in the height of the center of this first movement an angry exchange, you know, when they are almost shouting at each other. Something that Mozart had never dreamt of. This is a whole new development that comes about through Beethoven, and really no composer after Beethoven can ever write a piano concerto in quite the same way.
If someone is hearing these works for the first time, and we know someone always is, just being introduced to them, what would you encourage them to listen for or to be open to experiencing?
I think with Beethoven, I like to encourage people to look at the way he uses motives. Beethoven is not so much a composer who writes beautiful tunes that we can go away singing, but he's someone who takes small nuggets, small motives, and is just incredibly inventive with them. So I would suggest try and list to yourself what are the motives that Beethoven's using here. What are the building blocks out of which he's constructing these works? Because Beethoven is always the great architect. His music is always beautifully constructed. You always feel it's a bit like a building in that sense. So I would suggest someone takes that and works with it and tries to analyze what's going on. How is he transforming these building blocks?
You are also a pretty phenomenal writer, and I know that you released a new collection of essays, Rough Ideas, Reflections on Music, and more. And I think you've talked a little bit about Beethoven in some of these essays, is that right?
Yeah, I talk about cadenzas in Beethoven, particularly in one of these essays. But they range of all kinds of subjects, also some non-musical subjects, but mainly about music. I talk about being backstage and what it is to travel and play concerts. And there's a lot of real practical things about practicing. How do you get your trills to be better? What's it like recording in a studio, recording in concerts? So that it explores many of these things from many different angles.
And you often write during the dead time on the road, which I'm guessing that has decreased substantially during this time of a pandemic. So when are you writing now?
Well, I haven't been writing many words, Julie, now, but I am writing a lot of music. I accepted last year 3 commissions for works to write over the year. And I thought at the time, gosh, have I bitten off more than I can chew? Because when am I going to find time to do all of this? Well, the pandemic happened, and so I've had a lot of time at home, and I've been able to do a lot of writing of music. So I've been working hard on a string quartet for the Takash, which is due not till next year, but still, it's good to get working on it now. And very excitedly, too, I'm writing the test piece for the Van Cliburn competition next year that all the competitors are going to have to play. So I've been working on that as well. Also, I've been making some recordings. We found a situation here in London where I, the producer, and the engineer could all be in different rooms and so completely separated. So I've made actually 2 recordings so far during this pandemic. So I've been trying to use the time as productively as I could, but it's very strange. I've never been home for as long as this since I was at school.
You recently performed at Wigmore Hall, and the hall itself was empty. But it was a live broadcast, if I understand that correctly. So tell me what that was like and what was most memorable about that for you.
It was, of course, very strange. I left my home and went down to Wigmore Hall, where I've played many, many times over the years, most recently in January. And I walked out and there's an empty hall. Now, I've rehearsed in empty halls, of course. But there's a strange pressure, of course, to playing a concert when it's live, when it's broadcast, and yet when there are no physical people in the hall. It felt like, though, we were keeping something very important alive. Because I think it's, for me, what Wigmore Hall did during that month, they had a concert every weekday of June. I don't think it's the best thing to do to wait till everything's back to a perfect situation and then say, okay, we're going to start playing concerts now. I think we have to, with all health considerations, of course, and safety considerations, I think it's important to keep playing. And I think it's important to keep the skill of playing, keep music alive in people's homes and in people's hearts. Life is always going to be a risk, you know, and I think music, for those of us who play it and those of us who listen to it and for whom it's an important part of our lives, it's a risk to get in your car and drive to a concert hall. It's always going to be something of a risk. And I think it's very important that as soon as we can, that we get back to living our lives, not quite normally, of course, so we have to be careful. But I don't think we should wait until the situation is ideal. I think we do need to start getting together with our family, with our friends, because life on Earth is short, however perfect it is. And the longest life, if you live to 100 years old, it's a very short space of time. And I don't think we should waste it, and I think we should treasure it and not take unsafe risks, but be connected to each other as soon as we possibly can.
What have you learned about yourself during this pandemic?
I've learned about myself that I don't need to play concerts to be happy. You know, I'm so used to traveling all the time. This is the longest I've ever been in one place in the last 35 more years. I always thought that retirement would feel very empty. What on earth would I do with myself if I wasn't traveling to New York, where I've spent so much of the last 35 years? Seeing friends in Australia, traveling to the Far East, playing for audiences, eating in restaurants, all of that's been swept away, and I'm still content and happy. And so I've learned that, and it's a very nice lesson to learn, because I think a lot of us have felt that, oh, I couldn't possibly live unless this, and actually we can. We can live with a much simpler kind of way of living, and that has been wonderful. I suppose it's a sense that everything has not been cancelled but is on hold, maybe, that's made that possible. I still don't quite feel that I'm retired. I have a lot of dates in the diary. I have a lot of plans. And I'm hoping, I'm not exactly chomping at the bit, but I'm hoping to get back to normality as soon as I can. But I've learned that it's okay so far. If you have food to eat and somewhere to live, and you have people in your lives that you can talk to and even at a distance see, life is still full of blessings. So I would say that's what I've learned the most from this period.
My final question goes back to your new 3-CD set. 100% of the royalties from the sale of this 3-CD set is going to a charity called Help Musicians. Can you talk a little bit about that and why you decided to do that?
Well, this is a charity that's been going for many years. They've looked after musicians who have fallen on hard times, sometimes through injury, and actually sometimes just through old age. There was a nursing home that this charity ran that was for retired musicians who were particularly orchestral players who were able to retire and live together and share all those wonderful memories that they'd had together. So it's been going a long time. But this pandemic coincided with the release date of this CD. And I think, like all of us, particularly at the beginning of this crisis, we felt a certain helplessness, really, because everything around us was being swept aside. And I spent many hours just erasing concerts from my diary and wondering when we'd ever get started again. And I know for some people who were living on the edge of freelancing, this was really a sense of, I cannot pay my rent next month because I don't have these concerts that were in my diary. And I know that no classical recording ever generates a lot of money, but I felt that it was important to make some sort of gesture to my colleagues who were really had fallen on terribly hard times. And so I thought, well, this was something I could do to say, you know, we're in this together and, you know, I'm thinking of you and let's get through this as best we can. And so that was it was some gesture as this record was released that I thought maybe could help some people stay a little bit more cheerful.
Stephen Hough recording the Beethoven Piano Concertos. If you're enjoying new classical tracks, the best thing that you can do for the show is to tell somebody else about it. Help spread the word and take a moment to rate and review us on your podcasting app. Thank you to Valerie Kaler for producing this episode of New Classical Tracks from American Public Media. I'm Julie Amacher.